This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Hidden Bodies by Caroline Kepnes. Read by Santino Fontana.
Chapter 1. I buy violets for Amy. Not roses. Roses are for people who did something wrong. I have done everything right this time around. I'm a good boyfriend. I chose well. Amy Adam lives in the moment, not in the computer. Violets are the state flower of Rhode Island, I tell the guy wrapping up my flowers. His careless, dirty hands graze the petals, my petals. New fucking York.
Is that so? He chuckles. You learn something new every day.
I pay cash and carry my violets outside to East 7th Street. It's hot for May, and I smell the flowers. Rhode Island. I've been to Rhode Island. I went to Little Compton last winter. I was lovesick, petrified that my girlfriend, R.I.P. Guinevere Beck, was in jeopardy because of her emotionally unstable friend, R.I.P. Peach Salinger. Someone honks at me, and I apologize. I know when something is my fault, and when you walk into a blinking crosswalk, it's your fault. Just like it was my fault last winter. I go over the mistake in my head a dozen times a day. How I was hiding in a closet upstairs at the Salinger house. How I had to pee but couldn't leave, so I pissed in a mug, a ceramic mug, and I put the mug down on the hardwood floor of the closet. I ran when I had the chance, and there is no way around it. I forgot the mug. I'm a changed man because of that day. You can't go back and alter the past, but you can go forward, become a person who remembers. Now I'm committed to the details. For example, I recall with total precision the moment that Amy Kendall Adam returned to Mooney Rare and Used to my life. I see her smile, her untamed hair, blonde, and her resume, lies. That was 5 months ago, and she claimed she was looking for a job, but you and I both know she was looking for me. I hired her, and she showed up on time for her first day with a spiral notebook and a list of rare books that she wanted to see. She had a glass container of superfruits, and she told me they help you live forever. I told her that nobody gets to live forever, and she laughed. She had a nice laugh. Easy. She also had latex gloves. I picked one up. What are these?
So I don't hurt the books, she explained.
I want you up front, I countered. This is just a basic job, mostly stocking shelves, manning the register.
Okay, she said. But did you know that there are copies of Alice in Wonderland that are worth over $1 million?
I laughed. I hate to break your heart, but we don't have Alice downstairs.
Downstairs? She asked. Is that where you keep the special books?
I wanted to place my hand on the small of her back and lead her down to the cage where the special books are preserved, boxed, saved. I wanted to strip her down and lock us inside and have her, but I was patient. I gave her a W-9 and a pen.
You know, I could help you go yard sailing for old books, she said. You never know what you're going to find at yard sales.
I smiled. Only if you promise not to call it yard sailing. Amy smiled. The way she saw it, if she was going to work here, she was going to make a dent. She wanted us to travel uptown to estate sales and hunt library clearances and jam our hands into empty boxes on the street. She wanted to work together. And this is how you get to know someone so well, so fast. You descend into musty, vacated rooms together, and you rush outside together to gulp the fresh air and laugh and agree that the only thing to do now is get a drink. We became a team. An old woman pushing a walker looks up at me. I smile. She pointed the violets.
You're a good boy.
I am. I thank her and keep walking. Amy and I started dating a few months ago while we were on the Upper East Side in a dead man's parlor. She tugged on the lapel of the navy blazer she had bought for me, $5, at a tag sale. She pleaded with me to drop $700 on a signed, wrinkled edition of the Easter Parade. Amy, I whispered, Yates isn't big right now, and I don't see a resurgence on the horizon.
But I love him, she begged. This book means everything to me.
This is women. They are emotional. You can't do business like this, but you also can't look at Amy with her big blue eyes and her long blonde hair out of a Guns N' Roses song and say no to her.
What can I do to change your mind? She wheedled.
An hour later, I was the owner of an overpriced Easter parade, and Amy was sucking my dick in a Starbucks bathroom in Midtown, and this was more romantic than it sounds because we liked each other. This was not a blowjob. This was fellatio, my friends. She stood and I pulled her boyfriend jeans to the floor and I stopped short. I knew she didn't like to shave. Her legs were often bristly and she's all about water conservation, but I did not expect a bush. She kissed me.
Welcome to the jungle.
This is why I smile as I walk, and this is how you get happy. Amy and I, we are sexier than Bob Dylan and Suze Rotolo on the cover of the Freewheelin', and we are smarter than Tom Cruise and Penelope Cruz and Vanilla Sky. We have a project. We are amassing copies of Portnoy's Complaint. It's one of our favorite books, and we reread it together. She underlined her favorite parts with a Sharpie, and I told her to use a more delicate pen.
I'm not delicate, she said. I hate delicate.
Amy is a Sharpie. She's passionate. She fucking loves Portnoy's Complaint, and I want to possess all the dark yellow copies ever made and keep them in the basement so that only Amy and I can touch them. I'm not supposed to overstock a title, but I like fucking Amy near our yellow wall of books. Philip Roth would approve. She laughed when I told her that and said we should write him a letter. She has an imagination, a heart. My phone rings. It's Gleason Brothers Electricians about the humidifier, but it can wait. I have an email from BuzzFeed about some list of cool indie bookstores, and that can wait too. Everything can wait when you have love in your life. When you can just walk down the street and picture the girl you love naked on a mound of yellow complaints. I reach Mooney Books and the bell chimes as I open the door. Amy crosses her arms and glares at me, and maybe she's allergic to flowers. Maybe violets suck. What's wrong? I ask, and I hope this isn't it, the beginning of the end, when the girl becomes a cunt, when the new car smell evaporates.
Flowers? She asks. You know what I want more than flowers?
I shake my head.
Keys, she says. A guy was just here, and I could have sold him the Yates, but I couldn't show it because I don't have keys.
I toss the flowers on the counter. Slow down. Did you get a number?
Joe, she says, tapping her foot. I love this business, and I know I'm being a dumb girl, and I shouldn't tell you how into this I am, but please, I want keys.
I don't say anything. I need to memorize it all. Lock it away for safekeeping. The low hum of the music, the Rolling Stones' Sweet Virginia, one of my favorites, and the way the light is right now. I don't lock the door. I don't flip the open sign over. I walk to the other side of the counter, and I take her in my arms, and I dip her, and I kiss her. And she kisses me back. I've never given anyone a key. But this is what's supposed to happen. Your life is supposed to expand. Your bed is supposed to have enough room for someone else. And when that someone comes along, it's your job to let her in. I seize my future. I pay extra to get ridiculous theme keys, pink and flowery. And when I place these pink metallic things in the palm of Amy's hand, she kisses them.
I know this is huge, she says. Thank you, Joe. I will guard these with my life.
That night, she comes over and we watch one of her stupid movies, Cocktail. Nobody's perfect. And we have sex and order a pizza and my air conditioning breaks.
Should we call someone? She asks.
Fuck it, I say. It's Memorial Day coming up. I smile and pin her down and her unshaven legs scratch against mine and I'm used to it now. I like it. She licks her lips.
What are you up to, Joe?
You go home and pack a bag, I say. And I'm gonna rent us a little red Corvette and we're gonna get out of here.
You're insane, she says. Where are we going in this little red Corvette?
I bite her neck. You'll see.
You're kidnapping me? She asks.
And if this is what she wants, then yes. You have 2 hours. Go pack. Chapter 2. She shaved. I knew she had it in her. And I did my part. I really did rent a red convertible. We are those assholes, and we're cruising through the woodsy part of Rhode Island. We are your worst nightmare. We are happy. We don't need you, any of you. We don't give a fuck about you, what you think of us, what you did to us. I am the driver, and Amy is the dream girl, and this is our first vacation together. Finally. I have love. The top is down, and we sing along to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I picked this song because I'm taking it all back, all the beautiful things in the world that were corrupted by my tragically ill girlfriend, Guinevere Beck. I see now that she suffered from borderline personality disorder. You can't fix that. Beck and her horrible friends ruined so much for me. I couldn't go anywhere in New York without thinking of Beck. I thought I'd never listen to Elton John again because his music was playing when I killed Peach. Amy taps my shoulder and points at a hawk in the sky. I smile. She isn't the kind of asshole who needs to lower the volume on the music and discuss the bird and read into it. God, she is good. But no matter how good it gets, it is always there, the truth. I forgot to take the mug. That fucking mug haunts me. I understand that there are consequences, and I am not unique. To be alive is to have a mug of urine out there. But I can't forgive myself for screwing up, like some girl forgetting a cardigan after a one-night stand. The mug is an aberration, a flaw. Proof that I'm not perfect, even though I'm usually so precise, so thorough. I haven't hatched a plan to retrieve it, but Amy makes me wish I had. I want the world clean for us. Lysol fresh. Now she offers me her scratched sunglasses.
You're driving, she says. You need them more than I do.
She is the anti-Beck. She cares about me. Thanks, Aim. She kisses my cheek and life is a fever dream and I wonder if I'm in a coma, if all this is a hallucination. Love fucks with your vision and I have no hate in my heart. Amy is taking all of it away, my healer, my back-teen beauty. In the past, I had a tendency to be intense. You might even call it obsessive. Beck was such a mess that in order to take care of her, I had to follow her home and hack into her email and worry about her Facebook and her Twitter and her nonstop texting, all the contradictions, the lies. I chose poorly with her and suffered the consequences. I learned my lesson. It works with Amy because I can't stalk her online. Get this. She's off the grid. No Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram, not even an email address. She uses burner phones and I have to program her new number into my phone every couple of weeks. She is the ultimate analog, my perfect match. When she first told me, I was flabbergasted and a little judgmental. Who the fuck is offline? Was she a pretentious nutcase? Was she lying? What about paychecks? I asked. You have to have a bank account.
I have this friend in Queens, she answered. I write my checks over to her and she gives me cash. A lot of us use her. She's the best.
Us?
People offline, she said. I'm not alone here.
Cunts want to be snowflakes. They want you to tell them how nobody in this whole world compares to them. Apologies to Prince. All the little fame monsters on Instagram, look at me, I put jam on my toast. And I found someone different. Amy doesn't try to stand out. I don't sit alone and scroll through her status updates and home in on her misleading photographs of staged joy. When I'm with her, I'm with her. And when she leaves me, she goes where she said she was going. Of course, I've followed her, and I occasionally look in her phone. I have to know that she isn't lying.
I think I smell salt air, Amy says.
Not yet, I tell her. Couple more minutes. She nods. She doesn't fight about stupid shit. She's no angry Beck. That sick girl lied to the people with whom she was closest. Me, Peach, her fucking fellow writers in school. She told me her father was dead. He wasn't. She told me she hated Magnolia just because her friend Peach hated it. She was lying. I read her email. Amy is a nice girl, and nice girls lie to strangers to be polite, not to people they love. Even right now, she's wearing a threadbare URI tank top. She didn't go to URI. She didn't go anywhere. But she always wears a college shirt. She got a brown shirt for me, just for this trip.
We can tell people that I'm a student and you're my professor, she giggled. My married professor.
She digs up these shirts at various Goodwills all over the city. Her chest is always screaming, Go Tigers, Arizona State, Pitt. I tend to the stacks and eavesdrop as people who come into the shop try to connect with her. Did you go to Princeton?
Did you go to UMass?
Do you go to NYU? And she always answers, yes. She makes nice with the women and she lets the dudes think they have a shot. They don't. She likes a conversation. She likes a story. My little anthropologist. My listener. We are nearing the road that takes us to Little Compton, and just when I think life can't get any better, I see flashing lights. A cop is coming at us. Hard. His lights are on and his sirens are blaring and the music is gone. I brake and I try to keep my legs from shaking.
What the fuck? Amy says. You weren't even speeding.
I don't think so, I say, keeping my eyes on the rearview mirror as the cop opens his door. Amy turns to me.
What did you do?
What did I do? I murdered my ex-girlfriend, Guinevere Beck. I buried her body in upstate New York and then pinned it on her therapist, Dr. Nikki Angevine. Before that, I strangled her friend, Peach Salinger. I killed her less than 5 fucking miles from here, on a beach by her family's house, and made it look like a suicide. I also did away with a drug-addled soda jerk named Benji Keys. His cremated body is in his storage unit, but his family thinks he died on a bender. Oh, also, the first girl I ever loved, Candace, I put her out to sea. Nobody knows I did any of these things, so it's like that if a tree falls in the woods question. I have no idea, I say, and this is a fucking nightmare. Amy rummages around the glove box for the rental's registration, takes it out, and then slams it shut. Officer Thomas Jenks doesn't take off his sunglasses. He has round shoulders, and his uniform is slightly too large.
License and registration, he says.
His eyes burrow into my chest, the word brown.
You heading back to school?
Just going to Little Compton, I say, and then I cover. Eventually, taking my time. He doesn't acknowledge my passive-aggressive defense. I was not fucking speeding, and I am not a brown asshole, and this is why I don't wear college shirts. He studies my New York driver's license. A century passes, and then another. Amy coughs.
Officer, what did we do wrong?
Officer Jenks looks at her, then at me.
You didn't signal when you turned.
Are you kidding me? Motherfucker.
Ah, I say. I'm sorry.
Jenks says he needs a few minutes, and he plods back to his car, breaking into a jog, and he shouldn't be jogging. He also shouldn't need a few minutes. As he opens the door to his cruiser and slips inside, I think of my prior offenses, my secret activities, and my throat closes up.
Joe, relax, Amy says, putting her hand on my leg. It's just a minor traffic violation.
But Amy doesn't know that I killed four people. I am sweating, and I've heard about things like this. A guy gets pulled over for a minor infraction, and somehow, through the sadistic magic of computers and system, the guy is pinned for all kinds of other shit. I could shoot myself. Amy turns the radio back on. Five songs play, and 20 minutes tick by, and Officer Thomas Jenks is still in his automobile, holding my personal information. If he's issuing me a simple ticket for failing to signal, if that's all there is to this, then why is he on the phone? Why does he keep pushing buttons on the computer? Does my freedom end at the beginning of the season when my iPhone shows sun and the sky above is swollen with rain? Because I do know a cop in this state. His name is Officer Nico, and he thinks my name is Spencer. What if he saw my picture in the computer? What if he recognized me and called Jenks and said, I know that guy, and what if...
Joe,
Amy says, and I almost forgot she was here.
You look like you're having a panic attack. It's not bad. It's not even a speeding ticket.
I know, I say. I just hate cops. She strokes my leg.
I know.
She reaches into the cooler and takes out a peach. A peach. Of course it kills me that we are moving backward. She is eating a peach, and I am obsessing about Peach Salinger and my mug of piss. That mug. I try to believe that it's gone. I picture a maid swiping it, disgusted, scouring it clean, dousing it with bleach. I picture a golden retriever. People with summer homes, they love their great big dogs. And he's sniffing around, pawing at the mug, and he knocks it over, and his master calls, and he runs, and my urine seeps into the floorboards, and I am safe. I picture a Salinger child playing hide and seek. The mug gets knocked over. I'm safe. I see a Salinger cousin, cunty, texting, absent-mindedly throwing shoes into the closet, losing her shit when a full mug soaks her precious Manolos, her Tory Burch sandals. She trashes the shoes. I am safe. I hear the door slam. Jenks is on foot. He might ask me to step out of the car. He might lie to me. He might try to trick me. He might ask Amy to step out of the car. He wears cologne, poor guy. And he hands me my license and the rental registration. Sorry about the holdup, he says. You know they give us these computers and half the time they're jammed up. Technology, I sigh. Free.
Free.
It's the end of us all, right? All the more reason I'd like you to use that blinker, he quips.
I smile. I'm truly sorry, officer. Jenks asks us if we live right in the city, and I tell him it's quieter in Brooklyn and everything is gonna be okay. I am blessed. I smell Jenks's hopeful body spray. I see his small life. It's all in his eyes. Unlived. Dreams he didn't chase. Dreams he won't chase. Not because he's a pussy. Because he simply doesn't see his dreams in detail. The kind of details that drive a person to pack their shit. To move. He became a cop because of the simplicity of the uniform. You don't have to think about what to wear every day.
You have fun, he says. Be safe.
I pull back onto the road and I'm relieved that my day, my life, doesn't end here. I have one hand on the wheel and I maneuver the other under Amy's cutoffs. I see our turn up ahead, the one that leads to Little Compton. I don't want the police anywhere in my future and I accept that I fucked up, that I left one loose end and I will never, ever do that again. This time when I turn, I use my fucking blinker. Chapter 3. We stop at Dell's Lemonade and sit at a picnic table, toasting with lemon slushy cups. Amy shrugs.
It's fine, she says. But honestly, this isn't that good, you know?
I love her contrarian way. People think everything is better when they're on vacation.
Yelp Nation, she says. Miserable people want to call it a one-star slushy, and insecure people want everyone to be jealous of them and be all, best slushy ever.
Sometimes I wish she could have met Beck. Wow, I say. You just described my ex to a T. She smacks her lips.
Which one?
It's vacation, so I let loose. I tell her a little about Beck, even though you're not supposed to talk about your old girlfriend with the new one.
So she was an Ivy League chick? She asks. Was she snobby?
Sometimes, I say. But mostly she was sad.
You know, most of the people who go to those schools, they are psycho because they spend their whole childhoods trying to get into those schools. They can't live in the moment.
I will fuck her on this table right here, right now. You are so right, I say. Did you ever date anyone like that? She shakes her head.
You can show me yours, but I don't want to show you mine.
She's the only woman left who knows the value of mystery. She tosses her slushy into a trash bin and we lie back on the table, watching the branches above us sway.
Talk, she says. Tell me.
I start at the beginning, in the shop. Beck without her bra. Amy says that's attention-seeking. And Beck buying her Paula Fox. Amy says that was to impress me. And this is where Amy is so beautiful and unusual. She doesn't interrupt me to tell her own story or slip into a jealous rant. She listens to me, and she is a sponge. It's cathartic for me to describe Beck's viciousness. And this is why you need to get in a car and go sometimes. I don't think we could have had this conversation in New York. I feel so aware with Amy, and she just gets it when I tell her about Beck tweeting from Bemelman's bar, the way she had to look up solipsistic in the dictionary. When I tell her that Beck referred to Little Compton as LC, she kicks the air. She gets it. All of it. I am known. She turns her head.
You guys came here together?
Her voice is higher, suspicious. No, I say. And technically I'm not lying. I followed Beck here. There's a difference. I tell her about the way Beck cheated on me with her shrink.
How terrible, Amy says. How did you find out?
I held her prisoner and broke into her apartment and found the evidence on a MacBook Air. I just had a feeling, I lie, because it's also sort of true. So I asked her, and she told me, and then that was it. We broke up. She strokes my leg. I tell her to Google Nicholas Angevine, and she does, and she scans the headlines, and she looks at me, horrified.
He killed her?
Yep, I say. And it's impressive. I framed him for the murder so effectively that I don't even exist in the Wikipedia page about the crime. He murdered her, and he buried her near his family's second home upstate. She shudders.
Do you miss her?
No, I say. I feel sorry for her, of course, but it wasn't good between us, you know? And when you came along, I mean, it sounds sick, but that was like, well, then I really didn't miss her anymore. She bumps her knee into mine.
That's sweet.
She promises me she won't cheat on me with a shrink. She is wary of physicians and psychiatrists.
People who thrive on other people's pain.
God, I love her brain. All pink and mushy and suspicious. I kiss her.
I'll be right back, she says.
And she leaves her purse with me and crosses the parking lot to the restroom. She walks for me. She turns her back and winks, same way she does in the shop. When she disappears into the restroom, I take her phone out of her purse. I'm never afraid of what I'm going to find when I look through her phone. I just want to know everything. It's like that guy in that old Julia Roberts movie who loves to watch her try on hats and dance around to Brown-Eyed Girl. Nothing in Beck's phone ever made me smile, but rummaging through Amy's always reaffirms the way I feel about her. The first item in her Google search history is Henderson Sucks. She's reading recaps of his talk show, Fuck Narcissism, the one we hate watch a couple of times a week, where he sits on the couch and the guests sit at the desk. The hook is that he's sitting on the couch because he's a narcissist who only wants to talk about himself. But every interview obviously devolves into talk about whatever shitty movies the guest host is promoting. She says Henderson's success is proof that our culture is edging toward a cannibalistic apocalypse.
What are you doing?
I startle and nearly drop Amy's phone. I look up guiltily as her shadow falls over me. She's standing, arms crossed, eyes narrowed. Fuck. I swallow. I am caught. Amy, I say, clenching her phone. I know what this looks like, but this isn't that. She holds out her hand.
Give me my phone.
Amy, I plead. I'm sorry. She looks away. I give her the phone and I want her to sit with me, but she crosses her arms again. Her eyes are wet.
And I was literally just thinking how happy I am with you.
I'm sorry, I say again.
Why are you snooping around? She demands. Why are you ruining this?
It's not like that, I tell her, reaching out.
No,
she says, waving me off.
I get it. You don't trust me. And why should you? I'm the one who showed up with a stolen fucking credit card the first day I met you. Of course you don't trust me.
But I do trust you, I say. And how strange the truth sounds. I'm looking in your phone because I'm fucking crazy about you, and when you go in the bathroom, I miss you. I get onto my knees and grovel. Amy, I swear, I have never been so crazy about anyone, and I know this is crazy, but I love you. Even when you're in the bathroom, I just want more. At first there is nothing. She is blank. And then she sighs and musses my hair.
Get up.
We settled back on the bench as a family emerges from a minivan, loud, sandy. 5 minutes ago, we would have been cracking jokes about them. Now we are somber. I nod toward them. You and I didn't grow up like that, and we're a little messed up because of it, I say. It's hard for people like us to trust each other, but I do trust you. She watches the mother squirt lotion onto the kids.
Okay, she says. That's fair. About the shitty childhoods and the trust.
I hold her hand as we watch the father try to reason with his unreasonable 4-year-old son, telling him he can't have another slushy because he won't have any room for hot dogs at the barbecue. The kid shrieks. He doesn't want a hot dog. He wants a slushy. The mother comes around and squats and hugs the child and says,
please tell mommy what you want.
The child screams,
slushy.
And the father says the mother is spoiling the child, and the mother says it's important to communicate with kids and respect their own desires. It's like watching TV. And when they disappear back into the minivan, the show is over. Amy puts her head on my shoulder.
I like you.
You're not pissed at me?
No, she says. I'm the same way. Sometimes I can't believe how alike we are.
I stiffen. You've looked in my phone? Candace Benji Peach Beck mug of urine. She laughs.
No, she says. But if you would ever leave your phone, I totally would. I'm not very good at trusting people either.
I nod. Look, I don't want to be that guy. But we can get better. She squeezes my hand.
I might fuck up.
Being together is the best feeling in the world. Better than sex, better than a red convertible, or that first I love you. Yeah? I ask.
Yeah,
she says. And mimicking is a sign of love. This was a good idea, this trip. We get more slushies for the road and get back into the vet. There's been an atomic meltdown and we're the only two people left on Earth, and this is why people shouldn't commit suicide. Because maybe, someday, you might get to sit in the shade with someone who is refreshingly different. I make her laugh so hard that she has slushy spilling out of the corners of her mouth. And then we drive away and find a quiet spot, and I eat her out, and when I finish, I have her spilling out of the corner of my mouth. Your vacation is not the best vacation ever. Mine is. I earned it. She caught me sneaking around in her phone, and still she spreads her legs. When we get to the hotel, she gasps. Wow! And when we walk into the room and onto the terrace, I don't gasp. I knew we were close, but I didn't realize I'd be able to see it so clearly. The Salinger Cottage. Twinkling, lit by fireworks, full of people. People who may or may not have seen my mug. Amy nods toward the house.
Do you know those people?
One of them, I tell her. They're the Salingers. I tell Amy about Peach's dysfunctional friendship with Beck and her inevitable suicide. Amy wraps her arms around me, and if this were a cartoon, I could stretch my rubber arm all the way across the beach, into that house, up those rickety stairs, into that bedroom, reclaim my mug of urine, and then, I would have it all. Chapter 4. The next day, we hit the beach with Ralph Lauren towels. We sit near the Salingers. I figure maybe, I can ask to use their bathroom. We can ask to use a bathroom. Nobody's gonna say no to Amy, and while she's making small talk, I can go upstairs. It's a reach, but it's all I've got.
Whoa, she says, shielding her eyes with her hands. He looks pissed.
I turn. A Salinger man whistles and storms toward us. My balls crawl back inside of me. Amy groans.
They're as bad as you said.
Let's be calm. But he's not calm. He's spitting.
This beach is private, he snarls.
Families fascinate me. Peach is dead, but there is her nose, her frizzy hair.
You need to be on the other side of the sand.
You can't be on the other side of the sand. And Amy peels off her shirt like she's Phoebe Cates in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I'm so sorry, she says. Did you want to let us know about anything else?
She smiles at him. And he's staring at her body, and she's a fucking genius. He skulks back to his ugly wife, and Amy laughs.
Can we get in the water already?
I need to warm up, I say. But really, I need to do recon on the Salingers. There are so fucking many of them, romping on their trampolines on the water, on the sand, as if the sand and the waves and the cottage aren't enough. Children scamper, and older Salinger men in Madras shorts with short-sleeve shirts talk vineyard vines, golf courses in Ireland, reunions. The women bitch about nannies and salesgirls and a waitress they all think is after their chubby husbands. You would never know that this family lost their daughter, their sister, their auntie. They are on vacation in every sense of the word. And their only purpose is to alert passers-by that they can't use the trampoline or sit too close. I have never seen such a family of cunts, living for barricades. We've already been yelled at, and I am not getting in that house today. So fuck it. I grab Amy and throw her over my shoulder, and she screams, and the Salingers glare, jealous of us, young, poor, in love. I carry her toward the water. The same water where I disposed of Peach. The same shore where she washed up months later after her tragic so-called suicide. Amy wraps her legs around me, and envious Salinger men watch, wish, drink. We stay like this, glued in Peach's ocean grave, and by the time we get out of the water, most of the Salingers have retreated into the house. It's colder now. And we put on sweaters, and Amy reaches into her beach bag and pulls out a children's book called Charlotte and Charles.
This was my favorite, she says. Can I read it to you?
Of course. She leans into me, and the story goes like this. Two giants, a man and a woman, live on a desert island. The woman is lonely, but the man feels safe. Humans arrive, and while the woman is excited, the man is hesitant. The last time humans were there, everything went to shit. The humans tried to kill them. Charlotte wants to try again, and Charles complies. But sure enough, the humans are ringing bells, the sound of which will kill Charlotte and Charles. But Charlotte and Charles wear earplugs to protect themselves. There's an earthquake, and Charlotte and Charles help the humans, then swim away to a new island. The second to last page of the book is a picture of the giants on an island together at night. Several years have passed. They look at the stars, and Charlotte wishes that more people would come. Charles says that the people would do the same fucking thing and screw them over. Charlotte concedes that this is possible, but she also reminds him that he could be wrong. And in the corner of the page, there is a ship. People are coming. Amy closes the book and smiles up at me.
Well?
That's one dark fucking book. She smacks my leg.
You can't swear at Charlotte and Charles.
She spins to face me.
Tell me what you think.
I liked it, I say. She nudges me.
Come on, what did you think?
This feels like a test, and it's supposed to be a vacation. I shrug. I want to let it sit a while. I don't like this culture of reading a book and spitting out an immediate reaction. She tilts her head like a schoolteacher with a slow kid.
I see that, she says. I've read it 100 times, and I've had my whole life to think about it.
She shivers. Are you cold? She shoves the book into her bag, and we leave the beach. I failed to retrieve the mug, and I failed to understand Charlotte and Charles, and walking on sand is just no fun. Ever. Back at the hotel, we shower together. I put my Charles in her Charlotte, and she helps me right back to the BuzzFeed guy. We bring Cajun scallops and buttery lobster rolls and cannolis to our room. We eat in the bed, and we fuck in the bed, and we laugh in the bed, and we wake up bloated, happy. I fuck Amy in the shower, and in the soaking tub, and on the balcony, her favorite, she tells me during what she calls blueberries in bed, and I fuck her on the sofa. And then I fuck her on the love seat. I memorize her face, her trembling lips.
Oh, Joe.
Her legs quivering, clinging. She opens her mouth, my little seal. I pop a blueberry into that hole in her face, the one that takes my dick in a way that no mouth ever did before. She winks.
Good shot.
We live here now, in this room, in these sheets, like a fucking John Mayer song come to life. We joke that they will cordon off this room when we go because nobody will ever occupy it the way we did. I love her more now than I did 5 minutes ago, more than I did 5 hours ago. I break the rules and tell her this because she is not like other girls.
I know, she says. Isn't it weird the way most people only get more annoying and you only get less annoying?
I jabber with a pillow.
I'm not annoying.
She shrugs teasingly and we bash each other with pillows, and she pins me down and drops blueberries into my mouth, and I plant my mouth on hers and we eat together. One mouth. I ask her about Charlotte and Charles, and she tells me to forget it, and I mark her body all over with my pulpy blue kisses. They'll have to throw away these sheets. And when she comes, she screams and she throws a pillow across the room. It goes out the window, over the balcony. She giggles.
So I guess that was what you call a one-pillow orgasm.
For a brief moment, I see Beck, the way she humped a green pillow. I smack Amy's ass. By the end of the day, there won't be any pillows left in here, I say, ready to go again. But she puts her hand on my chest.
Whoa, she says. Joe, we do have to go out.
We don't have to do anything, I say. And it must have been so much easier in the dark ages, before restaurants, when there was no fucking Little Compton coupon guide designed with the explicit purpose of interfering in our fuckfest.
Here,
she says, flipping through the coupon guide.
Scuppers by the Bay. They have a band.
Do they deliver? I try, and it's a waste of time. She's out of bed telling me that I'll be thanking her after I've had a good meal. And that's how you know you're in love. You put on slacks and feign excitement over oysters and live light rock. You grab the keys and leave. Scuppers by the Bay is overstuffed with assholes. The lot is jammed and the valets look stoned. There's a 16,000-piece cover band tooling away in the back, murdering Tina Turner's What's Love Got to Do with It, and the clamor in the kitchen is matched by a screaming spoiled baby at a nearby table with spoiled parents fussing over skewered scallops. We don't have a reservation, and the coupon is not valid tonight, and we are told to wait at the bar for 1 hour, maybe two. I suggest we go, but Amy nods toward a couple at the bar. They're overdressed. He's swishing his wine in his glass, and she's drinking something blue. I don't want to talk to them, but when Amy whispers to follow her lead, I start to get hard. She dabs gloss on her lips.
Okay, she says. We're going to pretend to be other people, and we're going to glom onto them.
Seriously? Her eyes flash.
You be Kev, and I'll be Lulu.
We really are the same. I like fake names, but I'm used to it being a means of survival or escape. Like when Officer Nico believed that I was Spencer Hewitt because of my Fugawi hat. I don't know, Amy, I say, fucking with her. Lulu sounds pretty fucking made up. She claps, excited, and we decide to be Kev and Mindy from Queens.
I'm a chef, and you're an aspiring actor.
An actor? It stings. Why not a director? Or doctor? She cups my chin in her hand.
Well, you're too hot to do anything else, honey.
I would like to take her into the handicapped bathroom and fuck her brains out, but she has already started in on the nice couple. When a woman wants to socialize, no penis in the world can replace meaningless conversation about iPhone autocorrects.
Ducked. Ha 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 ha.
And rental car snafus. So we pair off with Pearl and Noah Epstein. They're also from New York. That's so crazy. And they're both lawyers and they're actually likable. Funny. When we shake hands, Noah says,
Hi, that's Pearl. I'm Noah. And we're what Grammy Hall would call real Jews.
We talk about Woody Allen. And then we also meet Harry and Liam Benedictus. Harry is short for Harriet, yawn. She's a financial planner, and he's a broker. They have 2 under 3, and they're uptight, but they're also full of compliments. Liam freaking loves movies, and wants to hear about my career. We talk small. How funny is it when your mom texts? And I make up shit about my kooky mom sending me crockpot recipes. Amy talks about how her mom thinks LOL means lots of love, and our new friends think we're so freaking funny. The conversation drifts to terrible places at times, the ups and downs of the NASDAQ, but we survive. In this bar, lying to these strangers, there has never been more honesty between us. We are closer with every lie, undercover together, fusing. Amy talks about her imaginary father, the one who sends her articles about Rachel Ray. She is vulnerable, and we needed this, pretending to be people with parents, parents who text and call and love and ask for help with attachments. The hostess says we can sit now, if we're all willing to squeeze into a booth, and I want to squeeze my dick into Amy, and she is clapping. She loves booths. All women love booths. On the way over, Amy whispers,
Wasn't I right?
Yes, I say. This is a fucking blast. I get to sit beside Amy, our legs pressed together. She wraps her knuckles on the table and starts a game.
Okay, okay, she says.
And every man in this restaurant would trade his woman for Amy.
Favorite movie sex scene. I go first. The Town.
I've heard this all before, how much Amy likes Ben Affleck and Blake Lively together. I slide a hand underneath her skirt, and she doesn't object. And I move that hand underneath her panties onto her ass cheek. Noah worships that British newsie from HBO, how surprising, and sends the undercooked scallops back to the kitchen. And Pearl knocks over her chablis and says it's because she has spilkes. Harry crafts jewelry and sells it on Etsy. The waiter returns with scallops and I take the first bite and I nod. They're ducking perfect. Everybody in our party cackles at my stupid, easy joke, and we could be friends in real life. It would be a long Swiffer commercial with dogs and potlucks and Park Slope. I start to wish they didn't think of me as an aspiring actor named Kevin. But then if they knew that we were both high school graduates who never went to college, if they knew we worked in retail, these people wouldn't be friends with us anyway. I squeeze Amy's thigh. That's what's real. My take home. Amy says I'm for sure gonna make it as an actor, and Pearl says I have one of those faces. Her husband laughs and Amy's eyes glisten and she got a little too much sun today. I wish I could hit pause and stay here in this moment with the light fading. This is what all the love songs are about. The moment when you find your own way forward with someone and there is no turning back. Amy winks at me and gets out of the booth to request a song, Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. And the band doesn't know it, and she's pouting while our new fake friends are discussing the menu. I kiss her cheek. You're sweet.
What's that for?
I stroke her thigh and move my hand up to where the jungle used to be. I get it. She is puzzled.
Huh?
Paradise City, I say. Guns N' Roses, like the first time when you welcomed me to the jungle. Her face is blank. Pearl wants to know if we prefer calamari or Clam's Casino, and Amy says both, and she doesn't remember our Guns N' Roses connection. She's not as smart as I am, but maybe it's better that we're a little different. When it's time to deal with the check, Amy pulls the valet ticket out of my pocket. She excuses herself to go to the bathroom, and then I pretend to get a phone call and step outside. We latch onto each other and the valet delivers the vet and we're gone and it's like we were never even there. I do kind of feel bad, I say. I liked Pearl and Noah and Harry and Liam.
Oh, please, she sighs. When you split a check like that, it's almost easier if half the people disappear, you know?
When we get back into the room, she brings her blueberries into the bed. And she fillets me with her superfruit mouth, and I smush blueberries on her tits. I want to talk about our lies and our parents and Charlotte and Charles, but she says we should sleep because of the drive back tomorrow. I know she's right, but at the same time, I can't stand the idea of being asleep and missing 1 second of our life together. While Amy snores, I walk out on the deck and see the lights on upstairs at the Salinger house. Fuck that mug. It doesn't scare me anymore. I have a partner now. And this time, I'm leaving it behind on purpose. Chapter 5. The ride home is always different from the ride out. We're both a little burned out, a little hungover. We don't want to stop at Dell's for slushies, and we agree that lemon ice is precisely the sort of thing that sounds great when you start the vacation, but not what you want on the way home. We hit traffic. We laugh about our fake friends, and we forget to find out the brand of the sheets at the hotel. She holds my hand randomly as if to say, I can't believe you're real. This is love. This is Sunday. And when we get back into the city, she strokes my neck.
Will you hate me if I just kind of want my own bed?
I could never hate you, I respond. We make it to her street and I signal with my blinker and she laughs and that will be a running joke for us. That time we rented that red Corvette and got pulled over for not using a fucking blinker. I can't wait to be old with her. I put the car in park. She kisses me.
Thank you, she says. I hope you know how wonderful you are.
I hold on to her and breathe her in. Someone behind us honks. I wave the asshole around, and Amy climbs out. At the rental joint, the guy asks me if I had any trouble with the car. It is with great pleasure that I tell him we had absolutely no trouble at all. He looks at me like I'm crazy, and it's okay, because I am. I am crazy in love. The next morning, I can't get to the shop fast enough. I can't wait to see Amy. I can't wait to tell her that I found Pearl and Noah and Harry and Liam online. I can't wait to find out if she watched Fuck Narcissism last night, and if so, what she thought of Kevin Hart. I wonder what panties she's wearing today, and I'm excited to see if this shaving business continues. I quicken my stride and I reach the shop, but the music in my head ends abruptly. The door is slightly ajar. If Amy came in early, she would have closed the door, and Mr. Mooney hasn't been to the store in years. I yank the door open and step inside. I see dust particles in the air, and my nose adjusts to the shop, the way a place smells different when you return after a few days. My senses are on fire, and we've been robbed, and I don't want this kind of distraction after such a good weekend. The violets I bought Amy are on the floor, scattered, dry, the vase in pieces. There are papers everywhere, books tipped over. My laptop is gone. I tiptoe around the counter and quietly remove the machete from my hiding spot below the main entrance. I haven't held it in a while, and it's heavier than I remember. I am not calling the cops. They are not all janks, and I've learned my lesson. I creep toward the back of the shop, checking the stacks to my left, to my right. I move past fiction and biography, and at the back of the shop, the basement door is ajar too. The silence of the shop bears down on my brain. They are long gone, I think. But if they are still here, I'm slicing their throats. I clench the machete as I descend the stairs slowly, soundlessly. When I reach the bottom step, I gasp and drop it. I don't need it anymore. There is nobody here, but someone was here, all right. Someone who eats super fruits. There's a bowl on the floor next to the gaping hole where the yellow wall of Portnoy's complaints used to be. Amy. She stole every last copy. Didn't even leave one for me. She took the Yates first edition, too. The one she blew me for. The one that started it all. There's a blueberry-stained copy of Charlotte and Charles on the floor, right next to my computer and the pink keys. The ones I made for her. I grab my phone and call her, and of course this number is now dead, out of service, gone, just like all the others. I drop to my knees and scream. She left me. She stole from me. I bought that bullshit about her needing her own bed, and she must have come here right after I dropped her off. I throw her super fruits at the wall. Super cunt. I pick up Charlotte and Charles. I understand the meaning of that fucking book now. Don't trust women. Ever. I open it, and there is a message scribbled inside.
Sorry, Joe. I tried. But we really are the same. We both hold back. We both lose control. We both have secrets. Be good to you. Love, Amy.
I haven't made a comprehensive list of everything she took, but so far, I estimate $23,000 in rare books. She knew what she was doing the day she walked in here, and I fell for it. I should be dragged into a field and shot for being so fucking stupid, dick blind, cock sucked. We're the same, she said. Fuck me. Fuck her. She pulled the wool over my eyes with her latex gloves and her dick sucking eyes. This was never love. Not on the beach in Little Compton, not in this cage, not in my bed. The bitch came here to trick me, to rob me, and I made her fucking keys. I grab the laptop and get the fuck out of this fucking cage and I lock it. A little late, asshole. And I trudge up the stairs and I lock the basement door. What a fucking asshole I am. I should lock myself in the basement. And that's when I see another mess. Amy ransacked my least favorite section of the shop. Drama. She stole acting manuals. An Actor Prepares. 10 Ways to Make It in Hollywood. How to Make Them Call You Back. Monologues for Women, Volume 4. Are you fucking kidding me? You lying, thieving, hairy-legged beast? My head spins.